There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Good afternoon, one and all. Welcome to The Grill. 3 hours of sporting bites up here on the rooftop garden down at Barasti. Please do get involved in the conversation. You can have your say now by texting us on 4001 equally. You can have your say at Dubai iSport, or, of course, follow any of the boys' individual handles. We'll introduce you to the Grill panel in just a few moments' time. But if you are in and or around Barasti, get yourself down here. Busy, busy, busy. The car park is rammed at the moment. The beach area is rammed. A lot of people are starting to filter up onto the various top decks as well for a bit of sporting action and intrigue, and plenty to look forward to this afternoon. Earlies in the Premier League and over in La Liga, plus, of course, building up to our 7 o'clock kickoffs live here on Dubai 103.8, and some big games to look forward to over the weekend. Brazilian Grand Prix is taking place this weekend. Lewis Hamilton might have finalised that particular title, but still plenty of proving to be done on the course for Hamilton and all. We've got the Autumn Internationals for you. We'll mark a card on when and where they are taking place. Golf down in Sun City. There's plenty of cricket going on internationally, and, of course, here in the UAE, so we'll be reflecting on that one. Some special guests joining us a little later on in the show. Your opportunity to share your thoughts, as always. So, as I said, do get involved in the show. Text us now, 4001, or come on down to Barasti Beach, where it is on at the moment. The game is always on.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Come on down to Barasti, do join the conversation. The Grill is a fairly simple concept. When we went to the senior management at the radio, we sat down in front of them and said, we just want to get a load of sports fans around a table and talk sports for 3 hours. Yeah, sounds like a good idea. Go for it. Why not? Do it. We want to do it at Barasti. We want to do it on the top deck up at Barasti on a Saturday afternoon, just as the sun's going down, lots of people are coming in. Yeah, that sounds a great idea. Let's do it. Let's do it. Been doing it for the last 8 years or now or so. It's been going on. So if you haven't been down to a grill at the Barasti, then do come on down and say hi. And this is a proper day to do it. Time now for me to introduce the grill panellists to you. They read something like a cryptic crossword clue for Robin Hood or something like that. We've got Archers and Fortunes in the same building at the moment, or I should say on the same rooftop garden. Mark Archer is with us. He's got a big smile on his face. I mean, how good is this for you, for someone like you, Arch, who love your sport, but specifically love your rugby, specifically love your beloved All Blacks? A day like this doesn't get much better, does it?
Four years in waiting, Tom. 4 years since England took on the number one ranked team in the world, the All Blacks. And I've been waiting for this match for 12 months. I've been that excited. Do you know how excited I am about this match, Tom? Do you know we've been doing this show for 8 years, right? Correct?
Yep.
Do you know what I've forgotten today? For the first time in 8 years.
Have a look at who's playing or not?
I've got no notes. They're at home on my desk.
How are you going to cope?
Well, it's going to be a struggle. No, I actually sent the wife on a mission. She's going to bring them down.
But, oh, look at that.
But yeah, it's an irresistible object in the All Blacks taking on a movable force in England. 7 p.m. at Twickenham. It's a massive, massive match. The bit for me, the biggest sporting occasion today. It's a game of great magnitude. 12 months ago, England were the hottest team in world rugby. Their form hasn't been the same for the last 12 months. And in 12 months' time, Tom, these two teams could, this match could be a dress rehearsal for a semi-final in Tokyo Rugby World Cup in 12 months' time. So a lot on at stake today, and both teams getting close to full fitness as well. The All Blacks pretty much at full strength, and England missing a couple of players, but in a very good fine fettle as well after that win against the Springboks last weekend. So 7 p.m. if you're looking for anywhere to watch this rugby match, Autumn International this afternoon, this early part of the evening, come on down to Barasti. The big screen is going to be fired up. There's going to be a lot of people down here wearing the white shirts of England and plenty of guys wearing the black of New Zealand as well. So 7 p.m. that is one of six matches today, Tom. Let me mark your card on the other Autumn Internationals. Early kickoff is in Italy. They take on Georgia. Scotland will play Fiji. That should be a fascinating match. They're two clashing styles. Wales take on Australia at just after the All Blacks in England. That's about 9:30 UAE time. Ireland take on Argentina. Late kickoff at midnight is in Paris, where France will host South Africa. But 7 p.m. for me, mark your card. It's going to be a blockbuster. Get on down to Barasti. Book your seats up. Get some food in. Get the F&B flying. It's going to be a big match, Tom.
Bold words there from Mark Archer, calling it and touting it as the biggest sporting event of the day. Has he not had a look at the early kickoff in the Premier League, Matt Fortune?
Well, it's not so much the early kickoff that I'm keeping an eye on, although it will be Cardiff versus Brighton, capturing the attention of a few people, I would suspect. I'm not going to contest Arch's assertion that England v New Zealand is the biggest sporting event, certainly happening on this side of the world, but I want to have a look over at South America. That's what I'm looking forward to today. Arguably, in fact, it's not even arguable, I don't think. It is the biggest football match, club football match, that can happen anywhere in the world. So much so, it's the first time that Boca Juniors and River Plate have faced off in the Copa Libertadores final. It's the first leg tonight, about 1 a.m. local time, 1 a.m. UAE time, 5 p.m. local time over in Argentina. It's going to be an absolutely fascinating game. This is something that the whole world, any football fan, would want to watch. Away fans are banned from travelling. There's only 8 miles between the two stadiums, but such is the atmosphere, such is the feeling in Buenos Aires over there in Argentina, that no away fans are allowed to travel. It's going to be fascinating. It's not going to be the highest quality football match you're ever going to watch, for sure. I've been to River Plate and was kind of desperately disappointed. It felt like something like League One would be harsh, and it was a cup game as well, and it just, the atmosphere was the only thing that I could take away from that game. I almost got frustrated with the quality of football, but take nothing away from this. This is two teams, this is a football mad country, it is a football mad capital city, and at 1 a.m. local time, that is exactly what I'll be doing.
Have you done any derbies down there? You said you've been...
No, never been to a derby. I went to just the River Plate game. I was touring South America with my now wife, not then. Managed to convince her to come along to a River Plate game. And actually, it was being in the stands that was quite good fun. But it was interesting. It was one of those where you had to buy a ticket, not from a tout, but from an organised tour operator. Because it is, although the stadium is huge, they know when you're not from round there, and you don't want to be caught out, especially as an Englishman in Argentina. So it's one of those where you park up with a small group, you get led in through the back door, and then you go up to your seats and you kind of stay as far away as possible. And it's that kind of excitement that imagining it's the two teams, like I say, so close together, the whole city is cut right down the middle. It's going to be fascinating.
Going to look forward to that one. There is an early kickoff in the Premier League. That one gets underway in round about 20 minutes time. We'll have team news for you. Cardiff against Brighton are coming away shortly. There's also an early over in Spain as well. We'll keep an eye on, plus developments down in Brazil. Grand Prix there for you. And these autumn internationals, as was mentioned by Archie. As with the grill, though, we like to debate some of the big stories of the week and some of the big stories of the last 24 hours. One of them is emanating from the world of football, and it is a certain Raheem Sterling who is making the headlines again. Signed a new deal at Manchester City. Well, that's great for Man City fans. It's great for everyone involved at Man City. What's, I suppose, made it onto the front page is the fact that it's worth £300,000 a
week.
Wow. Now this has got people asking questions. Is he worth it?
Well, in the current football climate, absolutely. The argument of whether footballers are paid too much, I don't adhere to that view at all. I do think they get what they earn. The interest in the fact that we're talking about a 23-year-old Englishman signing a contract with arguably one of the biggest football clubs, certainly in Europe, he does deserve it. And he is key to that Manchester City team. We were discussing actually yesterday, you and I, Tom, if you took him out of that team, would they still be as good?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they probably would, but that's because they have so much incredible depth. And the good friend of the show, obviously, Chris McCarty, argued that you can see that Sterling, when he underperforms for England, would suggest that he needs those players around him. But you look at the way that he gets goals, he creates chances. It's a lot of it is done by himself. Yeah, you look at the goal that Riyad Mahrez scored against Tottenham a couple of weeks ago. It's Sterling beating his man, getting to the byline. And yes, he has intelligent players making the smart runs in the box. But without that burst of energy, I think Man City lose something when he doesn't play.
£300,000? I mean, they can afford it, but should they be setting those precedents for a player like that?
Well, it's a player's market. If he doesn't get it at Manchester City, he'll go on a free transfer and pick it up somewhere else. So, you know, it's market forces, Tom. It's if someone's got the skill and ability and someone's willing to pay for that skill, and it's the price tag is £300,000 a week, well, that's the price tag, unfortunately. And it's just spiralling, isn't it? It's just keep going. And lots of interesting chat about Manchester City's finances during the week. I don't know if we're going to delve into that in too much detail, but it's an incredible amount of money. He seems to be around for ages, Raheem Sterling. You think he's probably in his early 30s. He's 23 years old. He's sort of been around and been to World Cups and been on the Premier League for what seems forever. But congratulations to him.
I suppose it's difficult as well for people looking at someone like Raheem, because when he's when he's on fire, he's sublime. He is sublime, and he scores beautiful goals. And when he's on top of his game, is great. When he's not, and he seems to be a bit of a confidence player as well, just not backing himself, or maybe backing himself a little too much on certain occasions.
Almost falls over his own feet.
He almost falls over his own feet. Big error.
I tell you what, I could have done that for 300,000 quid.
But it worked for him again. It's getting in those opportunities, and you're absolutely right, Tom. He is a confidence player. What I thought was interesting, at the announcement of the new contract, he said he wanted to be more ruthless. Yeah. And I think that shows a bit more intelligence that he's often given credit for. He does make wrong decisions sometimes when he gets into those good positions, but I think he's smarter. He certainly developed under Guardiola to be a more effective player. He's always had that raw pace. He's always terrified defenders when he runs at them, but now he picks up space a little bit further back than he did, a little bit deeper, buys in that extra yard and realises that if he runs at defenders at full speed, he'll be able to create the opportunities. There was a fabulous video about 6 months, a year ago, of Guardiola just showing Raheem Sterling, if you change your body by about 20 degrees on the edge of the box, the space that you can create when the defender's at your back, and you watch Sterling do it now, it's such a tiny little detail, but it allows him to unlock that pace a little bit sooner than he would be able to if he took it to feet, then had to turn. And I think that level of intelligence is what has really deserved him and earned him this contract.
I suppose he's a commodity as well. I mean, not only is he an international player, he's one of the standout players for the Premier League. He's also one of those rare things, an Englishman in a top team in the Premier League as well. And a number of those top teams are obviously filling themselves with a huge amount of international talent. At the same time, though, there are quota regulations, the number of English players you've got to have in that squad, and therefore he is a premium.
I saw an interesting stat this week. I think England named their squad for the next round of international friendlies and the Nations Cup. I almost get confused between friendlies and Nations Cup coming up in a week or so's time. And I think Gareth Southgate, the statistic was that the Englishman playing in the Premier League is somewhere around 20, maybe 28%, 27, 28%. Correct me if I'm wrong on that stat, but he literally looks at the team in some positions, he only really has a handful of options who's going to pick for England. And if 70% of players in the Premier League are foreign, or in their starting 11s, that's probably the more true stat, in the starting 11s are foreign, it does make it a very difficult job for Gareth Southgate creating, you know, giving regular players, you know, chances in the English team who may not be playing, you know, starting for their Premier League team. I think Ruben Loftus-Cheek is an example of that at Chelsea. Most Premier League clubs, he will be a starter and a star, whereas he's a bit part player at Chelsea, where he comes off the bench and he starts some midweek games and he does okay, but he doesn't really get the run of form, and that came to the fore during the week. But as you go back to the point, Raheem Sterling, one of the names, you know, on Pep Guardiola's team sheet probably from the start, best 11 he's got. And it's a tribute to him.
But I do think it's a terrible cliche, but I do think the cream always rises to the top. And you look at someone like Sterling, who's overcome quite a lot of difficulties. He obviously had the big controversy when he left Liverpool. He was very open with his desires to move to the club, but that shows a real ambition. And I think nowadays English players are a little bit smarter with their transfer business. You look back a few years, maybe 10, 12 years ago, the likes of Steve Sidwell or Scott Parker, who were doing great things in central midfields, was for their, with all due respect, smaller clubs as they were then, Charlton and Reading. And then they took that big move to Chelsea. In fact, both of them went to Chelsea probably a little bit too early. There was a bit of hype around them and they went into flooded teams, and then they lost those opportunities. Now I think players develop a little bit more and then they get that opportunity. You look at the likes of Kyle Walker, John Stones from Everton and Spurs respectively. They came from Oldham and from Sheffield United and they built their careers from... And again, it's and Spurs fans, people know that I'm an Arsenal fan. I'm not calling Spurs fans a smaller club, but you're allowed to develop without that massive, massive glare that you do get at Man City. And then they make that move. Ruben Loftus-Cheek is an interesting example because he was in at the top already and there was a lot of hype about him. And I think anybody coming through at Chelsea suffers from the fact that they've got such a poor record of converting young English players into first team regulars. Loftus-Cheek would have been far better served and probably doing better at Chelsea now if he'd been at another club a few years ago. And he had an excellent season on loan at Palace, went to the World Cup, a lot of clamour for him to play more games, but he felt then that he was ready to kick on at Chelsea, and he's played, what, 3 or 4 games. And it's difficult, but I do think if you're good enough, you're going to get those opportunities.
Your thoughts, please, do get involved in the conversation. You can text us now on 4001. We'll take a short break when we come back. Let's give you some team news ahead of the early kickoff in the Premier League. If you're looking for somewhere to watch it, get yourself down here to Barasti. It's on the big screen down here at Barasti, where the game is always on.
This is The Grill. Get involved with the show. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Grill, where we're broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. If you're in the vicinity, do come on down. Weather is nigh on perfect at the moment. It's been an absolutely gorgeous weekend weather-wise, and the perfect weather for watching some football on the big screen live down here at Barasti. That gets underway a little later, in just a little while. And then, of course, we've got the rugby later on as well. England against New Zealand on the big screen down here at Barasti. Don't let that put you off if you're a football fan, because all the Premier League games will be shown on one of the 20-plus screens that are dotted around the venue here. So if sport's on your agenda this Saturday afternoon, get ye down to Barasti and be part of it. Cardiff against Brighton is going to be our feature game. We'll give you some team news with Matt Fortin in just a few moments' time, but let's hear from the respective managers. Let's start with Chris Houghton, if we can. He's delighted that one of his dunkers been selected for England.
What we have done as a club, I think we've given him the platform to make the progress that he has, and some of that's been under me, not all of it, and I'm sure that Lewis would be thankful to a lot of other coaches before me. But again, he's earned it. You know, he embarked last season as his first season in the Premier League. I think he'd done himself credit, I think, last season, and we're going through a time where there are so many good players playing in this division, and so many good English players. So the competition's high, and I think for Lewis to get into a squad, his second squad now, I think it's testament, I think, to the hard work that he's put in.
Manager thinks that he's deserving of his place in that England squad. What about you, Matt Fortune? Lewis Dunk, a man that needs more recognition?
Whether or not it's more recognition, this kind of comes back to the point we were talking about before, whether or not Gareth Southgate's just looking at players available, and I don't mean any disrespect to Lewis Dunk, but is he an international standard player? No, probably not. Is he going to elevate England beyond the levels they've been at already? Again, no, probably not. But will it benefit him? And you kind of look down the line and trying to take a positive from it, is that exposure to top level training that he will have at the England setup, does that then filter back into Brighton and help develop him and the other players around him perhaps? But I don't see any harm in including him, of course. I think there's other players included in this England squad that might do more harm, and I'm sure we'll talk about the Wayne Rooney debacle a bit later on. But no, I can't see any great problem with it at all.
Let's go over to Cardiff now. Let's hear from the ever entertaining Neil Warnock. Look, Cardiff hasn't had the best start to the season in the Premier League. Can they stay up? Well, certainly one man who believes they can, with good reason, is their manager.
I do believe that we can be better than three of those teams. That's what keeps me, when I look at the way that the other teams are playing, etc. But we do need to find more goals. We've got to find more goals. So it's up to us, really, to put pressure on them by, nobody expects Cardiff to pull away or to get results. And we've got to get some more results. And, in these next few games now.
It is live for you this afternoon from the Cardiff City Stadium. Gets underway in round about 4 minutes' time. Team news is in. Let's get that with Matt.
Yeah, well, as expected, unfortunately, Cardiff going into Neil Warnock's 100th game in charge of the club. It is also their worst start to a season after 11 games since 1974. They do have a big ask ahead of them. But interestingly, in my notes here is exactly what Warnock said. They don't have to be good to stay in this division. They just have to be better than three teams around them, and I think that might be tricky. Brighton are certainly a far better side. Brighton welcome back. Cardiff are missing Harry Arter. That is going to be a big miss for them. He's suspended. 5 yellow cards already. One of the first players to have picked them up, but it's that sort of energy that they'll really be missing in midfield. Brighton stick with the same team that won last week. Lewis Dunk, as you say, is in the side. Goalkeeper Matt Ryan, this I thought was interesting. He was voted Fans Player of the Month this year for October after 3 clean sheets. He was also the third busiest goalkeeper of anyone in the division, so he is really earning his crust there. Will he be put under pressure by a misfire in Cardiff? Probably not. They've only scored in half of their games, and they are also without any clean sheets in 8. It's going to be an interesting one. It's certainly not going to be the biggest Premier League game of the weekend, but it's one worth keeping an eye on for sure.
One man I never tire of listening to is, of course, Neil Warnock. I think every Premier League season needs a couple of characters on the sidelines, doesn't it? We've had them in the past. Ian Holloway when Blackpool were up on the heady heights in the Premier League. Neil Warnock more recently. I mean, Jurgen Klopp's taken on a role to a certain degree as well. But he's just one of those sort of straightforward... He just says it as it is, doesn't he?
He's very interesting to watch. He has a nickname, of course, that we're not allowed to broadcast his initials. But it's he is one of those characters, and there's a certain degree of me that actually wants him to do well this season. He's had a crack at the Premier League a number of times, and I think even he would admit that he's not quite nailed down a strategy of being successful in that division. Of course, we go all the way back to 2004, I think, when he almost stayed up with Sheffield United, and the 2006 it was, and the Carlos Tevez affair and Tevez scoring on the final game against United to keep them up, and how angry he was. And I don't think he's ever really kind of got that monkey off his back, and he is quite bitter about it. I can't help but think if he just sort of got rid of that bitterness, he actually might have a better crack at doing well with this Cardiff team. Are they going to be the one that break him for him? No, probably not. He was saying in the week that, yes, it's 100 games for him now. Has he got another 100 in him? He is 70 plus now. It'll be a shame to see him go. And I don't think he's going to stick around the whole season. I think he might be one of the casualties of the managerial merry-go-round.
They do love him in a press conference, though, because they can always pretty much guarantee that he's going to talk about something other than football in his weekly press conferences. This week, well, it was all about the Royals.
I think they bring a lot more to England, to Great Britain, than people give us credit for, right? And I think it's appropriate, Prince of Wales. I think the people in Wales, you know, love that as well. And I just think he's got some views. Yeah, he's got some controversial views as well at times. But believe it or not, so have I. And I think it must be our age where we get to where I think when you've been around and seen a lot of life, you know, you do. But you know, I am a massive royalist. I mean, one of the best times for me was when I met the Queen in Sheffield. It was an amazing, amazing time for me to meet her.
Just gone off on my there, hasn't he? He's completely gone off on my there.
I would love to know what the question was that teed that up, or did he just offer it of his own
accord?
Just
offered it. I think there was some chat during the week about the stadium being renamed the Prince of Wales Stadium or something like that. It's yet to be. It's still the Cardiff City Stadium, but there's a bit of chat during the rounds at the moment about naming rights in light of the fact that the heir to the throne turns 70 next week as well, so it's part of his celebrations.
Same day as my mother, which she will not be happy to hear me announce on the radio. Luckily, she's in London and not listening. But sorry if you are tuning in on the podcast, Mum. I do apologise.
We sort that out in the podcast, don't worry. That's for the thoughts of Neil Warnock. What about Chris Houghton? We were talking there about Chris Houghton, the way he's lined up to go to Wales today. One man who, well, he's like the sort of Peter Pan of football, isn't he? He beggars belief, just seems to get better, keeps banging them in, regardless of the fact that he, by his own admission, is not just half a yard, he's about 15 yards short of pace. Big Glenn Murray. Houghton is just full of praise.
That is down to him. You know, he's got a great desire to want to continue playing and play at the highest level for as long as possible. He lives his life very, very well. He looks after himself, and all of that enables him to still be scoring goals, and we hope that continues as long as possible.
I don't want to like Glenn Murray, Matt Fortune. I don't want to sit here and be one of his sort of big fans from them, because when you see his name on a team list, you sort of go, oh no, this is not what I paid my money for. This is not what I've come to see. Yet I can't help but like the man because of where he's come from, the adversities he's had along the way, the fact that he's so honest about his game and his attributes on that game, and the fact that he's competing in the Premier League and he's up there as one of the league's top scorers.
Absolutely. Only three players have scored more goals than him this season, which is fascinating. And actually, and you say he's not the type of player that people want to pay money to see, his goal against Manchester United, that near post outrageous flick over the goalkeeper, I thought was brilliant. And I don't mind him. I love players like this who you look at them and you think, you are so limited. How are you carving it out? But it's just, he's smart. He knows he's not going to be beating defenders for pace. And he's in an era now where even big, strong boys are also really quick. And he doesn't have either of those. But he's just smart. And I love those players that just, they hold their hands up and they say, do you know what? But I'm going to be a real pain to play against. He's one of those sort of players at amateur level. And you see, and I play at centre-half for my team, and you see this big lumbering brute come towards you. Actually, you just think, oh, this is going to be a real uncomfortable 90 minutes.
It is Glenn Murray. He is one of those, well, sort of miracle stories, really, performing at the top level of the Premier League, but very much rooted in the lower leagues in his experience and build-up to that Premier League. I just want to have a little listen, if you can, to this. We're going to go to a break after it, but it's a sort of a potted history of where Glenn Murray has come from, the adversities he's faced along the way, and how he's been taken under the wing at Brighton as one of their greats.
Welcome back to Goals on Sunday. Glenn Murray is our guest this morning. Always a treat to have you in the studio, Glenn. One of the things we were looking at this week when we were talking about you coming in was just how many different clubs you've been at and the range of clubs and different leagues you've been in going back.
Is that a good thing?
I think it's a good thing because it shows how hard you've worked to get the success that you've got today.
How did you end up in Wilmington Hammerhead?
Just playing for an amateur team up in Cumbria in Maryport, and funnily enough, turn of events, the head coach of that team, his brother was David Irving, who played out in the States in the 70s. Still over there at Wilmington. He said, "Do you fancy going out and playing for my brother?" I was like, "Yeah, why not?"
Mm-hmm. So you had a bit of time out there. What was it like playing abroad?
Yeah, brilliant. I was a young boy. Wasn't much money involved, anything like that. It was just lifestyle. Like, they paid for our apartment, things like that, and then trained every day. Went down the beach in the afternoon. It was just perfect. And but, I mean, the dream was always to come back, and play in the Football League, because that's what I'd grown up watching.
Yeah.
But once you started at that level, did you think, ever imagine that today you could be where you are?
No, I never imagined I'd make it the Football League. Mm-hmm. But it's just, things happen, don't they? Mick McCarthy came out on a pre-season tour with Sunderland, invited me back. Wasn't for him, unfortunately. Anyone you want me to call? I said, yeah, Paul Simpson, please. Called him 6 weeks later, called me up. Fans come for a reserve game.
Brilliant.
Scored. And just the rest is history.
As easy as that. And Mick McCarthy's responsible for that?
Yeah, knock-on effect from Mick McCarthy coming out to the States on tour.
But equally, had you not played well in the pre-season game, you might not have... I mean,
exactly, and then the reserve game for Carlisle, and then I think I spent about 10, 12 weeks on trial at Carlisle. Paul Simpson wasn't sure. Sent me on loan to... not on loan, obviously. Sent me down to Barrow to play some games, as they were only in the league below at the time. Carlisle were in the Conference, Barrow in the Conference North. Scored 10 in 10.
And that's
left,
not bad.
Left him with no option but to give me a contract, and yeah, never look back really.
And once you got into the Carlisle team and you're suddenly playing league football and you're thinking, goodness me, this is unprofessional. I mean, I still imagine it wasn't massively well paid, but that's the dream, you're starting to achieve it. Are you still thinking, I've got a chance beyond this, or is it just about where you are at that moment?
Just about where I am at that moment, and just trying to... took me a while to find my feet, to be honest. We got in the 18 months, because I signed in like the January sort of time, in the 18 months I spent there, we got back-to-back promotions, and the club just moved too fast for me. I just didn't develop as quick as the club did. Signed in the Conference, ended up in League One in 18 months, and I had to take a step back to Rochdale, and then was with Keith Hill and Dave Flitcroft, who were massive for my career.
But how difficult was it when the Carlisle are flying and you're feeling like you can't keep up with pace? That must be difficult for your confidence.
Do you know what? I've never been technically blessed. So at that stage of my career, I just made a conscious decision to work my nuts off.
That's a technical term.
Yeah. And do you know what? There's a lot of older pros around me, and I would literally be like, don't worry, I'll do it, I'll run for you, don't worry. Do you know what I mean? And just eager, determined, just desperate to play the game. And yeah, it's all worked out well, but it took for me to move to Rochdale to really find my goal-scoring form.
Does that step...
So, to be fair, you've got your just desserts then, haven't you, really? If that is the case, that mindset was there in the first place.
Yeah, because I'd stepped into a changing room of professional footballers that had been professionals for a long time. I was the young kid on the block sort of thing, and it was up to me to prove myself, not only on the field, but I felt to them as professionals, as seasoned professionals. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'd been desperate for that opportunity, and I was just... I wanted to take it with both hands and anything I could, and if it started with working hard, then that's what I would do.
And in terms of the experience you garnered by working through the leagues as well, now you're sitting in the Premier League, I mean, sort of that work ethic you were given, the fact that you were treated in a very different way, I should imagine, just because there weren't the resources to treat footballers down there like there are for you at Brighton, does that still live with you to this day?
Yeah, and I think I've been blessed really, because my career has always been a steady incline. I've never really stepped back too far or had any falls really. So
even having to go back to Rochdale,
no, because I was still hungry. I hadn't proven myself at that level. So yeah, I was still desperately hungry, and like I mentioned, Keith Hill, who's still at Rochdale now, he's fantastic at bringing young professionals through, and I just thrived in that environment, and I couldn't thank him and Dave Flitcroft enough. And obviously Rochdale are sort of a club that are willing to sell players, and when I signed there, I felt as though if I scored goals for this club, then I could move on, and they thankfully helped me with that.
Willing to sell or have to sell?
I think they understand what they are. They're in an area where they develop a lot of footballers, and they take the chances on the kids from non-league and the lower leagues and develop them and sell them on, and that's the way that they run it, really.
I mean, we see more and more players in the England side now who have worked through the leagues as well. And actually, is there a temptation, do you think, for some young, very gifted, talented players who get picked up by some of the big Premier League clubs to think that's the only way is to stay there? But the education you get if you go through some of the lower leagues will stand you in good stead when eventually you get your chance.
Yeah, I think it will, because you learn how to work hard. You learn how to adapt your game in different scenarios. The Premier League's very football focused these days, but when you move down the leagues, it's very physical. And you learn how to look after yourself. I think James Maddison's stepped up with Leicester this year. And he earned his stripes in the Championship, and he'll have been kicked from pillar to post, but he'll be used to that, and now he's stepped in the Premier League and nothing like that bothers him. Yeah, he's flying. And I think that shows that the players are there in League One, the Championship, to step up and go to the next level. And obviously Mason Mount at the minute at Derby, I know he's a Chelsea player, but he's still doing it in the Championship, and he got his call up.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport.
No goals to report over in Spain. It's 0-0 there, but there is a goal in the Premier League. Matt Fortune.
Absolutely, Tom, and it has not taken long. After 6 minutes, Brighton down there in South Wales have taken the lead, and it was the man we were talking about just before the game, celebrating his first England call-up, Lewis Dunk, drifted to the back stick, having seen Solly March win a free kick, running at Sol Bamba. Really shows where Cardiff have had problems this season. Solly March's pace, jinking, diving, and far out on the left, about 35 yards from goal. He was brought down, dusted himself off, swung in the free kick all the way to the back stick, and there was Dunk in about 2 yards of space, nodded it down beyond the goalkeeper, and it's 1-0 Brighton.
Thanks so much indeed for that one. Let's go to the world of golf, shall we? Let's go to Mark Archer, who can tell us what's happening in the Nedbank.
Big week of golf, Tom, because this is the last Rolex Series event before the DP World Championship up the road at Jumeirah Golf Estates. It'll be the place to be next weekend here in Dubai. But it's the Nedbank Golf Challenge, hosted by Mr. Gary Player himself at the very stunning Sun City just north of Johannesburg. Round three almost complete, and it's the Spanish man Sergio Garcia has a 2-shot lead. Only one under today. He is 10 under for his two rounds. He's got three holes to play up at the Sun City course. He's a 2-shot lead from the man from Finland. Mikko Kahinen is back at 8 under par. Thomas Dietrich, Lee Westwood, Louis Oosterhuizen, Louis Oosterhuizen, my local favourites, is back also at 7 under par. So it's Sergio Garcia, who shot 64 on the first day, really set his week off with a fantastic round of 64. Let's have a quick listen to him after going low on day one. Sergio Garcia.
Obviously felt great. You know, I rolled the ball nicely. I made some good putts here and there. One of those rounds where things kind of happened nicely to me. I think I played very smart. Probably wasn't swinging unbelievably, but you know, I kept it under control. I kept the ball in play all the time, which is difficult to do here. And you know, I managed to guess some of the wins here, right? That is very, very difficult. And you know, when you can do that here, it's nice to be able to shoot a score like I did.
You've got a golf course here in Sun City, Sergio, that you don't need to overpower. And it looks like you've got that little slider from left to right on a leash.
Yeah, it's what I'm feeling comfortable with. You know, I hit a couple of draws here and there, but more than anything, you know, just the shot that I'm feeling comfortable with. And like I said earlier, it's very important to keep the ball in play as much as possible here. And that's what I was trying to do. When I didn't feel comfortable with the driver because it got too narrow, I hit something less than that and tried to play the hole maybe a little bit tougher and realize those things, and you know, it worked out well.
I see a little, you're fresh off a win at Valderrama. In places, there's a bit of that here. Do you see that, especially around the greens and being a second-shot golf course? A little bit of Valderrama there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the greens are a little bit bigger than Valderrama here, and they have trickier spots to put the pins. But, you know, it's in a way you can see a little bit of that because it's a very much position kind of golf course. And, you know, I was obviously... I've done a well at Valderrama for a few years, and you know, and I've managed to do that well here in the past. So hopefully we can keep going like today.
Sergio Garcia then in control over at the Nedbank. We'll keep an eye on that leaderboard for you. But as you mentioned as well, all roads lead to the Jumeirah Golf Estates for the DP World Tour Championship, the season-ending event for the Race to Dubai. It's Molinari's to lose, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. It looks as though Justin Rose will not be playing. I think he's elected to play an event in Indonesia. So the majority of the successful European Ryder Cup team will be up the road at Jumeirah Golf Estates, Justin Rose excluded. But yeah, Molinari looks well in control. And it will be fascinating, though. Many things can happen. Big prize money up for grabs at Jumeirah Golf Estates. So someone can come from further back, but you'd think that Francesco Molinari is the man in control.
I'm just having a look at the top 60 at the moment, and Molinari's, I don't know how they work out their Race to Dubai points. I think they might need to try and have a little look at reining these in, because when you get to the penultimate event of the season, you've got 4,709,921 points. I think surely there's a simpler way to do it, isn't there?
Well, I think that's actually euros. That's actually their prize money, Tom.
So you get a point per euro.
A point per euro, or a euro per point.
So he's out there. He's well over a million ahead of Tommy Fleetwood in second on 3,684,755, despite the fact that he's played seven fewer tournaments in that Race to Dubai season calendar. So Francesco Molinari in the box seat, in the driving seat, all for him to do. Patrick Reed, the American, is in fourth place, and we're assuming that he will be over here as well as part of proceeding?
Yeah, I'm not sure whether he is or not. That there is PGA Tour events place. I think this week they're actually in Mexico, of all places. I'm not sure where Patrick Reed's playing or not, but it's a big prize pool to play for. You would have thought if you're in the hunt for a big payday, Tom, all the best players in the world will be here. So Patrick Reed, courtesy a lot of his win at the Masters earlier this year, that's one reason that he'd feature so highly up there, and does spend a lot of time playing in some of the higher sort of profile Rolex series events on the European Tour. So it'd be good to see Patrick Reed here. He's been here before at the DP World Championship, and it will be a fitting end to a great season of European Tour golf.
Yeah, going to keep an eye on that one for you, because obviously 60 is the cut-off point. However, if a couple of players do drop out, then we see those in the 61, 62, 63 sort of places coming into contention as well. Some big names, though, will not be making it down to the UAE, so we will keep an eye on that one for you and let you know more as and when we do. That's the world of golf, and we'll have coverage from the Jumeirah Golf Estates throughout the week, right here on Dubai Winner 3.8, official radio station for the season-ending DP World Tour Championship from the JGE. It starts on Thursday, but there is events before that, aren't they? They have the Pro-Ams, etc.
Pro-Am will be on Wednesday. I think there's one of the big European Tour dinners is on either the Wednesday night or the Tuesday night at the Atlantis, which is the official hotel. It's always a fun way to end the season. A lot of the players bring their families. They turn it into a bit of a holiday the following week. So it's a great way for the European Tour to celebrate another great season. And of course, that was all capped off by the Ryder Cup victory a few months ago.
It is a good week. It's a great event as well. If you haven't been along, then make sure you give it a go. It's free as long as you register online, don't you?
I think you can pretty much rock up and register there. You just give them your name and good to go. And it's a busy 3 weeks, Tom, because of course we've got the DP World Championship next weekend. Abu Dhabi Formula One the following week, and then of course your favourite event of the year, where you get to showcase your fancy dress, the Emirates Airline Dubai Rugby Sevens.
Looking forward to them all, and details right here on Dubai I-103.8. When we come back, we're down to Brazil. That's here live on The Grill. We're live from Barasti.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai I on Facebook.
This is The Grill. We're live from Barasti. We're up here on the rooftop garden, and we're getting ready for, a big afternoon of sports. Getting ready for it. It's already underway. Let's get the latest from the Premier League. Matt's watching the early kick-off, Cardiff entertaining Brighton.
Yeah, it's not too bad, Tom. I know we were a little bit down on it before the game started, but Cardiff have responded quite well to going behind after 6 minutes. Brighton do look to say they look comfortable defensively, I think, is probably a disservice to the effort that Cardiff are putting in. They're getting the ball out wide. They are causing a few issues. Josh Murphy is getting in behind every so often, but they're still lacking that big man in the middle to try and get his foot on something that's going through. Brighton haven't won on the road, or should I say have won once on just 19 games on the road. Getting that early goal has settled their nerves somewhat, and it did suck a bit of the life out of the crowd down there in Cardiff, but they have responded quite well. I think it'll be an interesting one going into the second half.
We've got no goals to report as yet over in Spain, but we will let you know as and when that happens. There's also the small matter of a big game down in South America a little later on, is that right?
Yeah, we touched on it earlier, the Super Clásico. That kicks off about 1 a.m. UAE time. It's 5 p.m. over there. It's the first of a two-legged final, the first time that the two biggest clubs in South America, River Plate and Boca Juniors, have met. It's going to be a fascinating game. I mentioned earlier that no away fans will be able to travel. You can just imagine the town. In fact, a colleague of mine is in Argentina at the moment, in Cordoba, so several thousand miles away, 100 miles away, should I say. But even there, the anticipation is building. It's going to be a fascinating game. As I said, it's not going to be one for real quality. I definitely think the best quality game of the weekend will come in Manchester tomorrow. But for fans of just theatre of sport, it's going to be incredible.
Question on this, the winner, Matt, will come to Abu Dhabi in December to take place in the FIFA Club World Cup. Is that am I correct?
Absolutely right. So the Club World Cup, which takes place here in December, there's only one space left. In fact, yesterday we watched the tail end of the game over in Africa, yeah, the African Champions League final, in which Esperance Tunis won, overturning a 3-1 deficit from the first leg against the much-fancied Egyptian side Al Ahly. They scored three times, first time right on the stroke of half-time, which is exactly the time to score in a game like that, and then cruised home with another two goals. So that's the third time that Esperance Tunis have won the African Champions League. It would have been a ninth for Al Ahly. So they come over, they join Real Madrid, of course, who won the Champions League earlier this year, back in May. Guadalajara coming from Mexico. From down your neck of the woods, Arch, you've got Team Wellington, and then you've got Alain as well, the local representative. So, yeah, it's a two-legged final in Argentina, so we'll know the result. The finals team, should I say, coming for the Club World Cup in 2 weeks' time.
It's going to be a busy weekend of sport over in Brazil, because you also got the small matter of the Brazilian Grand Prix.
This is the urban jungle, the circuit of passion. This is the history, memories and goodbyes. This is the energy, drama and glory. This is the unpredictable. This is Interlagos, Brazil, where anything is possible. The Brazilian Grand Prix weekend, live only on Sky Sports F1.
So plenty to look forward to in Brazil, the Grand Prix. I mean, obviously the drivers has been done and dusted. We know that Lewis Hamilton will take his title yet again, but there's still plenty of questions surrounding this season's Formula One standings, Matt.
It's been an interesting one. Of course, there's a fight for second, and they always say this. And I'm curious to know, when Hamilton very diplomatically says, of course, he's still interested in clinching the Constructors' Championships, is he that interested? Because I was reading earlier that Lewis Hamilton has never won a race having clinched a title earlier in the season, which I think is fascinating. For a guy as driven as him, all pun intended, I do think that is surprising. And obviously he does tie up quite late. It's four races to go. It's just interesting to see how much interest he has in that. Of course, Brazil, the sign of his famous win when he upset Massa on his home turf. It'll be an interesting one to watch. In final practice, Bottas was just minimally quicker than Hamilton, and then he had Vettel behind him, and then the two Red Bulls were fourth and fifth. So it's much the same as it has been for the rest of the season. And qualifying, I believe, is in about 4 hours' time.
Yeah. That's correct. It wouldn't be surprised if Lewis Hamilton lets Bottas win a couple of races here at the end of the season just to keep him happy, because he's done the same for him, you know. So, but it will be a great weekend next weekend. If anyone, we talk about getting up to the golf. If you haven't been to the golf before at the DP World Championship, it's definitely a weekend next weekend. Abu Dhabi next, the following weekend for Formula One weekend, is a sight to behold as well. It's the one place, I say it every time we go down there, it's the 10th anniversary in Abu Dhabi. It's the one weekend of the year you want to be in Abu Dhabi for any sporting event. That's the place to be that weekend in Abu Dhabi. It is fantastic. A lot going on. Some big concerts also. Guns N' Roses, Matt, you'll be there, you know, with your rocking gear on. Tom will be there for Sam Smith, and a bit something there for everyone.
Saying.
Well, something terrible happened to me this year when I realised I was actually maybe older than I thought.
Really?
There was a third member of the headline acts that I'd never heard of.
Post Malone?
Yeah. Tom, educate me, please.
Oh, yeah, Post is very good. Post is he's brilliant.
No, Arch is absolutely right. I think what is spectacular about that event is it's silly because it's such an enormous island, but just being on it, there's just atmosphere everywhere, and very rare is there actually any excitement on the track or anything to fight for on the track. So having those concerts, having all of the different parties that come in, it's not just those three big gigs. There's yacht parties, there's all sorts. It's an awesome weekend.
In the build up to this show, in the research of the show, because it goes on for weeks in advance, it really does. I was having a look through some of the comments in and around this Grand Prix, and I fell upon this comment from a certain Mo Farah. So I downloaded it. This is from our friends and colleagues at Sky Sports in the UK, obviously international broadcasters for Formula One around the world and great supporters of it. This is Mo Farah talking about Lewis Hamilton and his achievements. And see if you can't recognise a couple of the other voices.
In my opinion, if I had to vote in, I'll definitely vote for him and for what he's done for sports. And not just, you know, if you look back in history of the sport, no one has ever got to that position. He equaled it. And when has that Brit done that?
Never. I mean, Michael Schumacher, Fangio, yeah. Now Lewis Hamilton. He would be. Do you think he gets enough credit?
To be honest with you, I don't think he gets as much credit as what he's deserved. He's a great, nice guy. And maybe I'm saying that because I'm biased and he's my friend.
Now, forgive me for if I'm wrong, but is Chris McCarthy moonlighting or something like that? Is he now working for Sky Sports as well?
It's definitely a broad Scottish accent that I heard in there with the question. So all fingers point towards Chris McCarthy. I think, you know what happened, Tom, is Mo was here in the last week or so for the Dubai 30-30. He was doing some PR stuff for the organisers of that event. And I think Chris and Robbie probably got hold of Mo. And then Sky... You know, Sky, what are they thinking? They're taking our IP.
Picked up on one of McCarthy's stories. He won't let us forget about that, will he?
Oh, he's already been on at me about it constantly. We had we've had the pleasure of having Mo Farah stay with us down at Jumeirah, and I've been dealing with him over the last couple of days. And just to say, what a lovely bloke! It's very rare that we ask for quite a significant chunk of his time to do something with him as part of the Dubai Fitness Challenge, and he was just so up for it. We had a silly idea that we'll hopefully be releasing in the next couple of weeks. Chris McCarthy was down there as part of it, and he just was so receptive to all the ideas we had. And you think, it was funny, we actually realised that when you're an athlete like that, and it's the discipline that you have to be, an early wake-up calls. We had him up at 6 o'clock. In fact, we had a couple of other cast members that we'd hired from a local agency, and they were late and upset with the lack of coffee. But Sir Mo Farah, Knight of the Realm, was down there bright and early and ready to go.
You definitely wouldn't have had Chris McCarthy up at 6 p.m.
No, do you know? Do you know, I actually managed to do it, but I did have to bribe him with tickets to the theme park on the Friday, so...
We're going to play out this hour with one final clip. And who says that Formula One drivers... In fact, just before we do that, there has been a goal in Wales.
And absolutely right, and Cardiff are straight back in it. I'm just trying to see exactly what happened. It's Patterson there has scored a jinking run. Brighton having said in the last roundup that they looked totally comfortable at the back. Cardiff looking like they were running with absolutely no purpose. You've had one player, I'm sorry that I can't make it out, it's literally just happened, dancing past three or four defenders and floating a gorgeous little cross, just dinked over the goalkeeper's head and nodded in from about 2 yards. So Cardiff 11 and we played 28 minutes.
Just to mention in there that whoever says to us that Formula One is boring and it's populated by boring drivers who never poke fun at themselves or anyone else, classic little bit of Sebastian Vettel. I do like a team radio chat when it comes to Formula One. I think it's a great addition to the coverage of Formula One. So have a little listen to this. This is Seb Vettel doing the rounds in practice at Brazil.
There's something loose between my legs, apart from the obvious. So something flying around my feet.
Okay, copy.
Yeah. Around my feet, I mean, I'd be proud if it was what you think it is, but it's not.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.